Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march or demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marches never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had number shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go over on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cat. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
People who live in towns and cities in Uganda and many other African countries have some access to grid electricity to light their homes and power their businesses. But many rural people aren't connected at all. But simply waiting for the grid to arrive isn't good enough for entrepreneurs like Moses Akera. He recognizes there's a good business to be made harnessing the power of the sun.
I really prefer solar to be used in the community like this because it remains the property of the client. You don't pay bills and you don't buy fuel like somebody using a generator.
So solar energy is the best option for many rural Ugandans. But being new to the industry, many solar retailers like Moses were struggling to make their businesses a success.
We don't have capacity to advertise ourselves, our products. We don't have capacity to have quality technical training.
So the Rural Energy Foundation, a not-for-profit organization, introduced the Solar Now program in 2007. Its aim, to spread the benefits of electricity throughout rural Africa by providing training and support to existing solar retailers like Moses. And they encourage other retailers and entrepreneurs to start selling solar equipment from scratch.
Most of these retailers need to be supported in terms of training so that they can be able to run their businesses better. They also need support in terms of market awareness because so many people out here in the field do not know about solar, so we need to come and enlighten them.
As well as training, the Rural Energy Foundation loans retailers portable demonstration kits, which they use to drum up business in local markets.
What we're trying to do is these people are off-grid and they do not have access to electricity. So we're trying to show them how solar can improve their lives. For instance, we try to show them how they can make money from solar. For instance, here with us, we have a shaver, so they can use this to have barbershops. We also show them how they can use it to use light at their homes. See, when you have this light in your house, the children can study at night. They can use it in their shops to work longer hours, and they can use it at home.
If retailers want to use the Solar Now brand, they have to commit to providing high-quality installations and good after-sales service. The Rural Energy Foundation helps them achieve this by training solar technicians.
We're trying to get the entrepreneurs to sign service contracts, so when they sell the product, it also comes with after-sales service. Let's say they have to check to make a phone call to the customer after a certain period to check if the system is working. And then till after some time through the service contract, they also have to go and actually do the inspection of the system.
The Rural Energy Foundation has trained over 200 retailers in 9 African countries. So far, they've sold 57,000 solar home systems and 36,000 solar lanterns. They've helped at least 400,000 people, saved nearly 5 million litres of kerosene and 12,000 tons of CO2 each year. Basil Okelo is impressed and has decided to buy the equipment from Moses to set up his own solar barbershop and phone charging business. He's taking advantage of a credit scheme which helps entrepreneurs buy equipment from SolarNow retailers to get their businesses going.
SolarNow is giving me a loan. I'm going to make a down payment of 25% now. Later, in 3 months' time, I'll make another 25%, making a total of 50%. Then the remaining I'll complete within a period of a year.
With his system now installed, Basil is optimistic about the future.
Because this is a new investment I'm going into. I have never been into this business before. But as I see, I have the expectation that I'll make money.
Moses is growing his solar retail business too. He already had a shop in town. With support from the Rural Energy Foundation, he's now set up a small village branch to cater specifically for his rural customers.
Rural Energy Foundation is very important to us. If they help us training technician, we shall be in position to expand all over.
We hope that others will also adopt the private sector development approach. We don't want to be unique. We want to spread the word that this is a really efficient approach to get the technology diffused deeply into the rural markets.
The Rural Energy Foundation plans to expand into other African countries and broaden its range of sustainable technologies. Solar panels are now becoming a common sight here on homes, and shops buy them as well to run radios and offer phone charging, increasing their income and enabling people to communicate. And to everyone's delight, the local bar has installed a fridge powered by the sun. The owner is pleased with his investment.
Yeah, we're happy. Because it's cold, the beer tastes better, and so I get more customers.
All right, we're back for another installment of It's My House. And today's jump-off topic is the green-collar economy, inspired by Van Jones' book, The Green-Collar Economy. The green-collar economy and innovation. So we'll be back in a few minutes with it.
Yeah, that's right.
right, time for another edition of It's My House. And today our jump-off topic is the green collar economy and innovation. Now, there's a book written several years ago by Van Jones titled The Green Collar Economy. And the long and short of it, he wrote this, it was like first published right, I think probably right before Obama got elected the first time. But if you haven't read the book, I highly suggest reading it. Matter of fact, I need to go in. I don't know what I did with my original copy of it. I need to really, I'll probably download the Kindle today and read it again. But we've all heard of blue-collar jobs. Well, green-collar jobs revolve around renewable energy. But I, you know what? I would say sustainable. What's the word I'm looking for? Sustainable technology. Now, that includes solar panels, includes insulation. It includes, I would even throw tiny houses in there. You know, some of the new professions or growing professions, because I believe it's renewable energy, globally, in my opinion, it's still sort of probably in its pioneer stage. That's the way it looks to me. Because not everybody has solar panels on their home. I mean, everybody's probably seen a solar panel, but a lot of people don't know, believe it or not, the function of a solar panel. But you have also other, you know, retrofits. I would include tiny houses in there as being under the I would call a green, what do you call it, a green collar economy job. Tiny houses have a lower carbon footprint. Many of them, not all, could have solar power, maybe solar powered or renew or powered by some form of renewable energy, wind power, biomass, things of that nature. There's a lot there. So Van Jones, and he wrote the book The Green Collar Economy based on, in part, where a lot of new jobs will be created, including jobs and opportunities for people that might live in an urbanized inner city area. But it's wide open. You can be in a rural area. Now, I played an opening clip here today on the Rural Energy Foundation. Now, the Rural Energy Foundation, they changed their name to Solar Now, and Solar Now is one word. Solar is not solar and then now. It's one word, Solar Now. Mostly based out of East Africa. And if you want to take a look at the future in Western countries, I would say go take a look at, book a ticket and go to some of these developing countries, because that's where a lot of this stuff, like, sort of launches, where there's, you know, less government regulation on a lot of stuff. And what I like about, now, I know you have rural co-ops here in the United States, and you have some power companies, major power companies here in the United States, that are starting to go solar, with, you know, generating, you know, the energy to sell the customers or whatever. But the Rural Energy Foundation, the piece that I played here today, which is now called Solar Now, and this is where the ball is going. I don't know how it's going. Now, some people are doing this already, but with the Rural Energy Foundation in that piece, some of the jobs say you have people that are going out to these little small villages in rural Africa, and some in India too, because they're doing the same thing in India. They're going to rural locations and they're educating people. So they have people that are that could be a profession. Solar barbershops. I have not run across a solar-powered barbershop or hair salon in the United States yet. They might be there, but it's wide open. It's almost unlimited where the ball is going. So I would say, even if you decide not to take a trip to Africa, rural Africa now, or rural Asia, particularly, India's in South Asia, and then there's Southeast Asia. If you go to the rural areas, I think you can take a good look of what is coming to Western countries. Now, in some cases, I went to a community in West Virginia here in the United States. They make their own solar lanterns. And they do some other innovative stuff with biofuels. And they're right here in the United States, in the state of West Virginia, in a rural area of West Virginia. And of course, most of West Virginia, as in the United States, is rural. But if you want to look at the future. So let me go back before I go to phone lines here. With the Rural Energy Foundation, the reason why I play that clip so often, and then if you go online and put in Rural Energy Foundation, you'll find that clip itself, and get the visual on it, is that number one, we have to look at some distinctions here. And that's why I'm saying that what I just played for you, and I've been playing that audio for almost 9 consecutive years, and I still haven't seen any evidence of it over here in the United States. It might be here, but here's where I'm going with it, except for one community that I did visit in West Virginia. But it was just that one community. With the Rural Energy Foundation, what they did was they went into rural Africa. And rural Africa, for the most part, is off the grid. I'm talking about electrical grid. Now, for some places in rural Africa where they do have grid electricity, it can be up for now, and then later on this afternoon it can be out until tomorrow. But you also have a lot of people in rural Africa and rural India and rural Southeast Asia, that they will power their homes with diesel or gas powered generators. They're loud and they can be toxic. But with the Rural Energy Foundation, what they did was they have a first thing the solar panel systems that they sell to individual households. You know what? Let me put it this way. Just like practically everybody has a cell phone, everybody has their own individual cell phone, that's the way it's going to be. The day will be coming. The day is approaching. I don't know how fast it's going, because I've been playing that audio for almost 9 consecutive years. It'll be next month on December 24th. 9 consecutive years I've been playing that audio. The day is coming where everybody will live in a home that has its own power station. Some of the power companies that we know right now that are monopolies in various cities across the United States, they will be going bankrupt and some will be going out of business. I'm not saying all of them. I'm just saying. Just like at one time, Ma Bell had a monopoly on telephone services here in the United States. And then they broke up. They broke that monopoly up into different companies. And then people had long-distance phone calls. I haven't made a long-distance phone call, a paid long-distance phone call, and I can't even remember how many years now. I'm guessing somewhere along the line somebody still gets a long-distance telephone bill. But, between Facebook phone and WhatsApp app and Skype, I haven't made a long distance, a paid long distance phone call. Now, I have long distance phone calls every day. Okay. But I haven't had a paid bill to come in my mail, one line anywhere else, in God knows, probably 10 years. All right. That's what's going to happen, in my opinion, because there's already a motion in several developing countries. There's a day coming, every individual household will generate its own electricity. You won't be getting a bill from Pepco. You won't be getting a bill from Duke Energy. You won't be Pacific Light, whatever's out there in California on the West Coast. You will not be getting those utility bills, including municipal power, dealing with electricity and or water. With the Rural Energy Foundation, now their forte is electric. But you have people in various parts of the world, and for the sake of this conversation, because that audio was in Uganda. But the other African countries and other countries in rural areas where they have this, where they have cell phones just like you do. They have iPhones just like you do in a Western country, wherever you're listening to me right now. They've got those. So they have an independent power source via solar that's affordable. The systems that they use are scaled down. In the United States, in my opinion, the systems that you typically see, you might drop $20,000 or $30,000 on them, those systems, in my opinion, are like industrial size or commercial. But the Rural Energy Foundation, they shrunk it down. So the people are able to charge their cell phones, they run their fans, not heavy duty, central systems, but fans to cool the home. They have flat screen, they have a flat screen TV just like you do. All right. In the United States, you have boondockers. Boondockers could be somewhere out in the desert, Mojave Desert or whatever, wherever desert you pick in the United States, and they're having Super Bowl parties because they have the technology is out here right now. A lot of it's right on Amazon that you can buy. But it's going to come to a critical mass where the monopolized power companies, including municipal power companies, will become obsolete and dinosaurs and out of business. That's why I played the Rural Energy Foundation, that piece that I played earlier, because that's where the ball's going. And that all ties into the green-collar economy. Certain jobs that don't exist right now, like everything that you like, solar barbershops, you heard somebody cutting the hair and they're doing it with solar power. Solar barbershops are coming. To Chicago, Los Angeles, Seattle, Washington, Washington D.C. They're coming to every town in the United States. Now, when they will arrive, I don't know. But the cat's out of the bag. The cat's out of the bag, and a lot of jobs. Because if you listen to that audio I played of the Rural Energy Foundation. Like I say, it's on YouTube. Just type in Rural Energy Foundation, and you'll find that video. And then I want you to, have to play it back a few times, and count the number of jobs or businesses that are tied in to that video. And then you're going to be looking to the future because, I mean, right now, anybody within the sound of my voice, particularly if you're in the United States, you can set up your own chain of solar barbershops. Right now, there's no regulation on that in the United States for solar barbershops. You can become a billionaire just off that idea, solar barbershops. Even in rural areas, you have a lot of people get their electricity through a rural co-op. But the technology is out there right now where you can be totally independent and he don't even need to be a part of a cooperative. Or there's enough information out here just on that audio I just played with the World Energy Foundation, and these are all part of the green collar economy. It's wide open. It's totally wide open right now, right here, not only in the United States, but the entire Western Hemisphere and much of Europe. It's a global thing. But the World Energy Foundation made the system appropriate so that rural Africans, and then there's another company out of India, Selco, they priced it so low that somebody that lives in a rural part of the world, in a third world country or developing nation, whatever you want, an emerging economy, whatever you want to call it, they can afford it. That's the green collar economy. And right now, it's just, I've been playing that for almost nine consecutive years, and I still haven't run across anybody who's running a barbershop, a bar, having their home powered by, there are people that have, and a lot of people are grid tied, but everything you heard in that video is totally off the grid. Totally off the grid. There are going to be off the grid communities popping up. Now, just like last Thursday, we had on the ladies from the founders and the CEO from the Georgia, the Freedom Georgia Initiative. They have 502 acres right now. They haven't started building, but their community, because they're going for it in the long run, they want to have a municipal township. They want it to be, it'll be a mix. If you want to go on the grid, you have to arrange for it. But for starters, they'll be totally 100% off the grid. That is where the ball is going. That is what the green economy is going. And if you have any doubts about it, once again, if you're using a cell phone, everybody has their own. When was the last time any of you paid 25 cents or whatever a phone call makes at a phone booth? When was the last time you guys used a payphone? Okay. I can't remember. It's 2020, what is it now, 2022, almost 2023? I haven't made a paid phone. The last time I remember going to a phone and putting in a quarter or whatever it was to make a phone call, the last time I remember doing that had to be 1994 or 1995, somewhere around there. The day is coming where everybody, just like we have, everybody's got their own individual cell phone or access to one. The days of the monopolized power companies in Washington, D.C., it's Pepco for electric. For natural gas, for heating and cooking, it's Washington Gas. In the Carolinas, you got, at least in North Carolina, Duke Energy. In California, you got Pacific Gas and Light or something like that, PGL or something like that. Wherever you are, where there's a local monopolized power company, Baltimore, Maryland, you got Baltimore Gas and Light. New York City, I think you got Con Edison. I forgot what it is in Chicago. All of those companies, if you know anybody working for those companies, their days are numbered. And I'm saying that with confidence based on the fact that at one time, Ma Bell was king or queen of the hill, and Ma Bell is now deceased. If you want to look into the future, particularly the green collar economy, go out into the rural areas. The rural areas globally, it's where it's at. That's where it's at. Walmart started right in a rural area. There are more rural locations for Walmart than anything else. Why? Because in rural areas, it's just easier to get things done for a number of reasons. All right, that's my rant on that, the green collar economy. And innovation, there's a lot of tinkerers out there that, you know, they're working in their backyard and they're coming up with, matter of fact, tomorrow's millionaire or tomorrow's green billionaire, they're tinkering around with something in their backyards right now. Okay. Or kitchen table. And this is all part of the green collar economy too. All right. Even banks, you know, a lot of people are built, a lot of people are, if you notice, the majority of tiny house videos that you see on YouTube, some people buy their tiny homes. But the majority of tiny home videos that I run across, and I watch them every day, they're building them. And when you build them, you don't need a 30-year mortgage. So and the banking industry has been going through an overhaul for a number of years as well. So some of the banks that you know that exist today will either scale down or some will go out of business because a lot of people are saying, you know what, I don't want a 30-year mortgage. I'll just build one. All right, that's it. That's my rant. Once again, if you haven't read the book, I highly recommend you get the book of The Green Collar Economy by Van Jones. And let's see, what I'm looking at my notes. But anyway, let me open up the mic here. 309, good morning, Mr. Collins, and how are you today?
I am wonderful. How are you? I see that you're doing wonderful because you're most definitely starting us out with a lot of positive stuff. And I was looking forward to when the conversations were going to get going and what we were going to talk about and how everything was going to go. And I think it's just going to be a wonderful day today.
It will be. And let me put this out here. Now, yesterday, right after the podcast, I looked up the song that you recommended, Land of Confusion. So I did find the Phil Collins and Genesis version, and I found the one by Disturbed. I haven't uploaded them yet, but hopefully I can get them on for tomorrow. So thank you. And then Mr. Ledbetter, if he's out there too. So I did listen to both of them, and we'll get those on hopefully by tomorrow.
I did like the Disturbed one. That was pretty cool. But, yeah, it's just what we – there's such a message there, and I look forward to hearing it. I was wondering if it played before the show got started.
No, you didn't miss anything this morning on that. I didn't even play OU812. But, you know, I did Red Hot Chili Peppers' Love Roller Coaster, their rendition of it. But, no, I did find them yesterday, so I'll get them loaded up for tomorrow. But anyway, Chris, your thoughts on the – I don't know if you read Van Jones' book, The Green Collar Economy – he says in that book, he looks at it as a solution for a lot of inner city people. But it's not just limited to that because it's the way I'm looking at it is it's wide open. So like I include tiny houses in the green collar economy because it's. The way I look at green is, you know, how can you be sustainable? You know, so anyway, your thoughts.
Well, I haven't read the book, but, you know, people trying to live sustainably is what we should be doing, not be this throwaway society. And it should be a reuse society, and let's take the things that we can reuse, you know, to get destroyed, and build the economy. And, you know, the people that are on the street, they cost us money. Every one of us that pay in, all the businesses, all the people, it costs us money to put Band-Aids on their problems. But if you're able to take that weak link and pick it up, and with the palm of your hand, that's what it takes. You can't pick it up with the back of your hand. But you pick up those weak links. And when people make money, they spend money. So instantly your economy grows. And 80% of the money that's spent locally with a local business owner stays locally. But when you put it into the Fortune 500s, it's not staying locally. Yes, it might be employing some people that are local, but the 80% number has went down because it's going to move. Now, even though you're leaving 80% here, when we spend money outside our local community and we send it to other local communities, this is where, what is happening? Should there be something positive that would give a sustainable part on that money, bringing it back? Even though it left, it still comes back, because those communities, that even when we're buying the material that we need to make the product we're making in this community to send it out or do whatever we're doing online or even just in line, these are the key little things that if we take some of the greed and fix the need, when these people aren't in need, they've got what they want and they're going to be able to buy from you. They're going to appreciate you. They're going to show you that you are part of the solution, not the problem. Because if you're just going to take the money and stick it in the bank, imagine if you could stick a lot more in the bank when 10 of them showed back up and spent their money with you. You don't have to leave it all in the bank. And you definitely don't have to go give it to the government to turn around and do and go buy bombs and do something with more destruction. And you can put it into these people, into the community, and you have to show people they have purpose. This will bring the green out of you. You know, my goal is to ignite a fire in your heart that water won't put out and to start an inferno that'll never burn you. But it has to start with you. I can't make your mind up for you, but let's live green. Let's give a sustainable solution for our children. Let's give them a legacy to live on forever. And they can even start by doing this without even breaking a sweat, but being able to fill their stomachs with food and be able to have the fuel to think and not worry about being hungry. We have these solutions, and what's what we're talking about on the show. It's what we're doing, and it's not what we're talking about. It's what we're doing, because when this show's done, there's so many things that get done during that day, and tomorrow there's going to be even more. And these are the things that we're going to start talking about. And this is just beautiful, because I've had many conversations after this show yesterday.
Okay. Let me, for some people that might not know what, and Carlos, I'm about to open up your mic here in a moment. The distinction between blue collar and green collar, I'm going to try to illustrate some simple stuff. Now, like with heating, and let's say you heat with natural gas, and, you know, you have HVAC people that they know how to install a gas furnace or that runs off natural gas or an electric hot water heater. You have HVAC people or plumbers that know how to install all that. And that, his profession, whatever you might call him, a handyman or a plumber or HVAC professional, and HVAC stands for heating, ventilation, air conditioning, for people that don't know. Those are blue-collar jobs. Now, in Van Jones's book, The Green-Collar Economy, okay, he talks about, he introduces people to the idea of green-collar job. So an example of a green-collar job would be, like if you wanted to heat your place. Now, if you wanted to heat your place for a less expensive fuel, there are biofuels out here. Now, biofuels, let me simplify that. Anything that burns, it could be wood pellets, You know, there are various biofuels or natural elements that can be converted into biofuels. Vegetable oil is a biofuel. So I know of people who they heat their home using corn. No, it doesn't pop for those who think it does. But they heat their homes using corn, and corn is less expensive than the propane or natural gas, definitely less expensive than electric. So a green-collar job would be somebody who either sells the corn that's designed for that corn heater, and or it could be the person who delivers it, that type of biofuel. So those are green-collar jobs. For electric, some people might go with solar electric because you have a lot of electricians. They know how to wire your house for grid electricity, but there's a number of them, a number of electricians that know nothing about how to wire a home with solar panels. So there's a growing, well, let me see. I call it a slow growing demand for solar installers because, now this is from what I see, you guys might see it differently, but right now, most of the solar technicians I know of that can install solar panels to generate electricity from your home, most of those are mom-and-pop operations. Those are the ones I've run into over the last 15 years or so. I'm sure they have some bigger operations, but the majority ones that I've run into are like mom-and-pop operations. But as people become more aware of the benefits of solar electric or wind power, somebody that can install a windmill at your home to generate electricity, because solar is good for daylight hours. Solar electric is good for daylight hours, but with wind, the wind blows around the clock. People that sell the batteries. So anything connected with that would be a blue-collar profession. Solar panel, technicians, installers. Then there's solar thermal for heat or hot water. There are many new jobs being created, most people have not heard of. And then there's another category of people I'm going to put in the green collar economy. You have a lot of what I would call tinkerers or backyard inventors, where they'll take something like, we're going to open up Chris's mic in a moment. I mean, Carlos' mic's in a moment. There are a lot of people who know how to put a carport up in your driveway or yard, but how many are doing it where a rack of solar panels are on top of the carport, and that's your own personal power station, at least for electrical power, to power your home. So instead of getting power from your local municipality, if they sell it, electricity, or the local monopoly, power company, then you put up your own carport or pay somebody to put it up, but it's a solar carport, which also acts as a power station to power your home. So and for that, now some people might want to put up a solar carport or solar whatever power station, and they might have a brand name on it, and when you get to that, that's when you get into intellectual property and all that other stuff. So with that said, let me open up Carlos's. Good morning, Carlos.
How's it going, brother? Nice to be on your program. Fine.
Well, you know something about carports, and you know something about patent law, or would it be trademark law? But let's start with you have a number of people out here that I mentioned that are tinkering with various things. They come green technology, so to speak. What have you noticed in your observations out here?
Well, as a patent attorney, I've noticed that during the pandemic, there is a huge increase in inventions, which is not surprising. When people are idle, they start thinking about problems. And an invention is a novel solution to a problem. So when people ask me, hey, I want to create a startup, I want to start a business, this is what I tell them. Find a problem that you're passionate about, work on solving it, and you've got a business. Solve it in a novel way, and you may have an invention. So I've seen a lot of creativity occurring since the pandemic occurred.
True. Now,
I myself invented a lot.
Now, just, you mentioned some of, because you've done the carport yourself, but I've only seen one I'm in Lakeland, Florida. I've only seen one carport, and it was at, I wasn't even looking for it. I just ran across when I was going from point A to point B. And I ran across, I guess it looked like some apartment building, but they had a carport there with about 10 spaces to park your car, but they had a rack of solar panels on it, on top of that carport. But that's the only time I've seen it with my own eyes in person. I think something like that can be even turned into an industry, or people can have a brand. I mean, I guess it's limited to imagination, but when it comes to intellectual property with these inventions that people are coming up with, inventions, your suggestions for how should people protect that?
that's a great question. And, of course, you can try to do it yourself. That's one possibility. The patent office is supposed to help the public. So if you're what they call a pro se inventor, that's an inventor that's representing themselves, then the PTO will help you. However, I have taken over cases from inventors that have tried to do it themselves, and oftentimes they make things worse than actually helping themselves. And this is because everything you say while you're trying to get your patent in front of the patent office is called part of the record. It's recorded, all communications back and forth. And what that means is that everything that you say can and will be used against you. You've heard that, right? During litigation, that's where they go through the record and they look for anything that the inventor said, that the attorney said, that can be used against that invention if it gets litigated. So it's very important to say as little as possible while you're getting the case allowed. And it is a bit of an art form, and this is why we have patent attorneys like myself to help out. That being said, we are the most expensive part of the process. And that's the problem, is that the system has become unavailable to what I call the little people. No disrespect. My little people are small inventors, startups, and universities that are not well funded. So the system is not very well set up to help that community, which, by the way, is the community that really, really needs the wealth, which is very unfortunate. So what I've done, and it's the only way I've been able to sort of help, is by teaching everything that I know in order to minimize my time. So when I work with small inventors and startups that are, you know, strapped for money, which sadly, you know, 99.9% of them are, right? I have webinars that I send them to. I teach them everything that I can so that we can make the process as efficient as possible, and that way we can get a patent filed as cost-effectively as possible. But it's still expensive, relatively speaking, you know, and of course, cost always comes up. Traditional patenting, where you go through a law firm and they do everything, is the most expensive way to go. And you're going to be paying anywhere from $5,000 to $25,000 for just filing a patent application in the United States Patent Office. And most of that money will be attorney time. For example, the government fee right now for a small entity, which is a small inventor, filing just what's called a provisional patent application, which is a special type of patent application, the government fee is like $130. For a regular application, the government fee is like $800. So why does a patent cost $10,000 to $20,000? Well, you're talking to the reason. I'm the reason why patents cost $10,000 to $20,000. So the only way I've been able to work with that community and be effective is by teaching them everything that I know. So I work under the concept where I teach people how to fish rather than sell them the fish. But of course, I also work with companies that say, Carlos, just do everything. You know, we've got the budget. Don't worry about being efficient. But with the little people, I have to be very, very, very efficient because they just don't have the funds. I don't know if that's answered your question.
That's for patents, right? And that's simply for an invention?
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Now,
yeah.
A trademark, give us a distinction between trademarks and patents.
Okay. That's a great question. It comes up all the time. A patent protects an invention, and it protects the functionality of an invention, right? So let's talk patents. I invented the first car. Let's pretend we go back in time and the car has not been invented. In fact, let's say no vehicle has ever been invented that uses a motor, okay? And I come up with an idea of having a frame, having at least one wheel attached to the frame, and having an engine that drives that wheel. Now, what have I described? I've described anything from a unicycle to a motorcycle to a steam engine to a car to whatever. So you know, when you first come up with something that nobody's ever thought of, you're entitled to claim it very, very broadly, like I just claimed a vehicle. So what is the beauty of a patent? As long as you make a frame and as long as you attach at least one wheel to the frame, that means one or more wheels, and as long as you attach a motor to the frame, and as long as that motor drives that at least one wheel, you will be infringing that imaginary patent that I'm talking about. And that's how patents work. They're the right to exclude others from making what you invented. So if you invented a frame with an engine that drives the wheel on the frame, as soon as anybody makes a frame, puts a wheel on it, and has a motor, drive that wheel, I don't care if it's four wheels, one wheel, you know, I don't care if it's a steam engine, a gas engine, an electric engine, they're going to be infringing that patent, and you're going to be able to go to them and say, you know, thank you for inventing this, but I have a patent, and therefore I am asking you to either stop doing what you're doing, that's one option, or pay me a portion of the money that you're making off of what you're doing, because it's violating my patent. And that's how the patent system works, to create limited monopolies to allow the little people to become the big people. Because if you can exclude somebody from doing what you're doing, you can create a monopoly, you can set prices, and you can grow your business. This is how Apple became Apple. This is how Google became Google. You know, this is how Henry Ford became Henry Ford, right? He was able to file patents, and he was able to monopolize on his invention. Now, what happens after the patent expires? you know, because patents are limited time. They last 20 years is how long a patent lasts currently. Then that invention enters the public domain. So what that means is when a patent is expired, anybody can do what's in the patent once it's entered the public domain. And that's how patents help innovation. They allow small people to generate companies with a limited monopoly. And when that monopoly is over, that technology enters the public domain so anybody can practice it and compete with each other. So that's how patents work. So they protect functionality. They protect inventions. An invention is a novel solution to a problem. That's all an invention is. Trademarks are the brand. Like if I say to you, give me your apple on the street in a mean voice, you're going to think I'm trying to steal your phone, right? You think I'm trying to take your iPhone. However, 30 years ago, if you went on the street and said, give me your apple to somebody holding a lunch bag, you know, let's say somebody's holding a lunch bag now and their phone, right? And you go up and you say, give me your apple. They're going to think you're trying to steal the phone, right? Because it's Apple phones are pretty valuable, you know, what are they, like $700-$800 a phone? 30 years ago, if I said that, even if you had a phone, not that we had Apple phones back then, but, you know, when I said, give me your Apple, you think I want your fruit in your bag because you didn't know that Apple was a trademark for phones and computing products. So that's how trademarks work. It's a mark that's associated with your service so that the public now relates the mark to the service. So if I say Apple right now, you probably think of computing products, not fruit. And that's right, because Apple has spent a lot of money advertising their brand, Apple, so that now it's become almost a household word. If I say Google, Google, I'm talking about a search engine, right?
Right.
But Google doesn't mean search engine. Apple doesn't mean computing products. And that's the beauty of a well-written trademark. A well-written trademark does not suggest the service. Apple for computing products, Google for search engines, excellent trademarks. We deliver flowers, not such a great trademark. Because you're describing the service that you're doing. It's a good website. You know, let's not get confused between websites and trademarks. You know, WeDeliverFlowers.com is a great website. It's not a very good trademark because, the more suggestive that the mark is of the service, the less valuable the mark is. So Google for search engines is a good mark. Apple for computing products is a good example of a good mark. Tiny Paw, one of my clients for pet toys, is an example of a good mark. Tiny Paw, it doesn't suggest a service, but it does sort of suggest a tiny paw, which could be a pet, a rabbit, a dog, a cat. You know, so it has some suggestiveness to it, but overall, it's a really good mark. So trademarks protect the brand, and patents protect inventions. Sorry for the long-winded answer.
No, we needed that. And then copyrights, that's specifically for written content or what?
Yeah, you know, when you say intellectual property, it's an umbrella, and it includes a bunch of tools. You have to think of them as tools. You know, it shouldn't be an umbrella. I guess it should be like a utility closet, perhaps. And in the closet, you have all these tools you can use to protect your innovation, right? So patents protect functionality, and I explain how they're valuable, because if you can get a broad claim, you can prevent people from doing what you're claiming. Okay, so that's how a patent works. Very broad protection for functional inventions. Trademarks are always needed because that's your brand. You know, a trademark is going to be needed whether you have a patent or not, you know, because a business that doesn't market is not a business. They're not going to be around because nobody will hear of them. So the brand, the trademark, I would argue is probably something that every company needs. then let's go to copyrights. Copyrights are for protecting works of authorship, a computer program, a song, an image, a painting, you know, something that's created by a human. Now it falls under subject of copyright protection if it's a work of authorship. You know, it has to be artistic, or, you know, you just can't copyright like a sentence or, you know, a word. It has to be a work of authorship. So think book, story, movie, you know, there's a lot, lots of the arts, you know, that's copyright protects the arts basically. And the authors that are the creators of the arts, something that you didn't mention that is part of intellectual property is also what's known as a trade secret. And a trade secret is just that. It's a secret of your trade. And the best example to date is probably the Coca-Cola formula. Coca-Cola did not patent their formula. You can patent chemical formulas, by the way. This is how we get patented drugs, for example. So if they had patented their formula for Coke, right now everybody could make Coke, right? Because I told you patents last a certain amount of time, and after the patent is over, you know, it enters the public domain. So had Coca-Cola back in the 50s or whatever patented their formula, that patent would have expired by now, and everybody would know the formula, which means everybody could make Coca-Cola, and there's nothing that Coca-Cola could do about it except compete with you on marketing. So, you know, they decided to keep it secret, which was the right decision, by the way. So part of being an effective patent attorney is understanding that there's all these tools and how to use them and when to use them. You know, when do you keep something secret? When don't you keep it secret? When do you patent? When don't you patent? When do you search an invention? When don't you search an invention? You know, these sort of questions are the sort of questions that inventors need to know. And the webinars that I've put out there answer these questions, and they're open source. You know, I put my teachings out for free, and the reason I do that is because it's part of my business model. Part of my business model is teaching innovators everything I know in order to minimize my time, and I do that through education.
I've got a question. All right, well, let's go back to Ford, when Henry Ford was still alive. Now, he didn't invent the automobile. And you also had, Chrysler and General Motors out there. Mm-hmm. So I guess nobody could have claimed, huh?
Well, no, I know where you're getting with that. Apparently, I think the automobile was invented in Germany. I forget, but I know where you're you're going with that. That's correct. What he invented...
Right.
What he invented is the production line. That's
okay.
What he
the assembly line. Okay. Right.
Yeah. So this is the thing. See, is that this is the part that's interesting. There's an incredible book. If anybody's interested in innovation, it's called Rembrandt's in the Attic. Rembrandt's in the Attic. I forget the name of the author. But it talks about the concept. You know, some of the concepts I've been talking about. You know, a pioneering invention is an invention that's brand new. Nobody's ever heard, you know, think of the wheel, you know, the filament for the light bulb. And that's the example the author gives, actually, is the filament for the light bulb. Okay. So you invent the filament for the light bulb, right? Never been done before. You know, we're talking light, right? Light bulbs.
Right.
Okay. So you invented the filament for the light bulb. Nobody's ever done it. You are entitled to claim that very broadly. You know, an apparatus having a wire wherein the wire is coupled to a voltage source wherein the voltage source heats the wire. That's a broad claim, right? That covers a light bulb. That covers a stove. That covers a lot of things. Well, when you're the inventor of the filament, you're entitled to cover a lot of things because you came up with it. It's a pioneering invention. But what Rembrandt in the Attic points out, since an invention is a right to exclude, even though you invented the filament for the light bulb, that doesn't stop somebody else from making the machine that makes the filament, making the machine that makes the glass, making the machine that makes the electrode that the, you know, that the, you know, the bottom part of the light bulb that plugs into the socket. You know,
right.
That doesn't stop somebody from inventing the socket. That doesn't stop somebody from, and you see where I'm going with this, right?
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
There's other things that are related to that invention that can also be patented, the manufacturing facility that makes the filament, et cetera, et cetera. So the point that the author was trying to make in the book was that you have to develop a portfolio around your idea to have an effective monopoly, and the author explains why. I patent the filament, right?
Right.
You patent the machine that makes the filament, all right?
Mm.
You can't make a filament with your machine, because as soon as you make a filament, you're violating my filament patent. And I'm going to say, you made a wire, that wire is being used to get heated in, you know, in a light bulb, and therefore you're violating my claim of my patent, right? You have to stop. You can't make these anymore. By the same token, as soon as I go to make a filament using their machine, they're going to say to me, hey, it's awesome that you invented the filament, but you're violating our machine patent. So what happens in that situation? I go to the machinist and I say, okay, you can use my filament patent. And the machinist says, okay, you can use my machine patent. And now we're Ford and Chevy. Do you see how that works? They cross-license the patents to each other. That's how corporations use intellectual property. They cross-license it to each other. So you've got chocolate, I've got peanut butter, and we're like, hey, peanut butter and chocolate's a good idea. Let's
and come up with Reese cups.
Share. Yes. So patents are used by the corporations in contracts negotiations, usually. So let me give you an example. You guys probably heard perhaps about the lawsuit of Motorola and Apple, like, I don't know, 6-7 years ago. Everybody was saying, Apple is going to...
Those companies, but I didn't hear about the lawsuit.
It was a huge lawsuit. It was, you know, Apple sued Samsung on computer interfaces, something related to phones, you know, some sort of software patent. And you know, Samsung was violating the patent, okay? So, you know, all the newspapers, the people that aren't patent attorneys are writing, oh, Samsung's going to be out of business, you know, Apple's going to shut Samsung down, and I kind of laugh because I know how things operate. 80% of an iPhone uses Samsung chips, okay? So, you know, Samsung is not going away. Apple is not going away. It's a way for them to renegotiate their contracts. See, because Apple says, hey, you're violating our user interface patent. And Samsung says, hey, you're buying 80% of your chips from our facilities. And now they have a method of negotiating, right? Apple can say, well, if you drop the price by a penny, we'll let you use the user interface patent. And now that's why you have similar user interfaces on Samsung and Apple phones. That's why you have similar features on Chevys and Fords. That's why you have similar features on printer A and printer B, because they cross-license these patents to each other. We are going kind of in-depth,
very educational. The Patent and Trademark Office, are they one in the same office?
Yeah, Patent and Trademark Office, USPTO, United States Patent and Trademark Office. They have very similar electronic systems for filing. Everything can be done electronically now. They also have tutorials, by the way, for the people listening. You know, besides my webinars, you know, the beauty of the internet right now is you can literally learn anything you want right now. The Patent Office, the Trademark Office of the Patent Office has incredible tutorials on trademarks. If you search, USPTO trademark tutorial. I'm not going to search it right now, but if you poke around, you will see some tutorials by the USPTO on trademarks. What's a trademark? You know, what types of trademarks are there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Same thing with patents. There's videos and tutorials, and you know, the PTO isn't an active educational, you know, they serve the public, right? So they're right. actively putting out information for the public. And it's supposed to be a system for the public, but unfortunately, it's difficult to navigate, and this is why we have patent attorneys. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I'm saying that it is very difficult. And this is why, you know, we have patent attorneys that are, you know, experts in their fields and also in how the patent office works and how examiners work and, you know, how to be effective in that system.
Okay. Hold on a minute. We got another caller here. 347, area code, your mic is open.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, I'm Jonas. Hey, Carlos.
Oh, hey. Yes, this is Jonas. He's our one of our incredible artists that's helping out with the Dream Habitat project, which is now Dream Habitat and Hope. As you guys know from the previous shows, I've teamed up with Chris Collins. I'm a vet. I'm building greenhouses that grow fish plants and mushrooms. And Mr. Collins is building tiny homes for people that need tiny homes. So now we've said, you know, you got peanut butter in my chocolate, you got chocolate in my peanut butter. We're going to be making tiny homes and greenhouses to feed homeless vets and the homeless communities. And we've got, you know, Chris is a godsend. He's got a bunch of projects he's working on. He's got the manufacturing facilities for the frames for these buildings. And we're going to have a meeting very, very soon, I think this Friday, between Chris, myself, and our co-inventor, who's an architect and artist, Maria. And we're going to figure out how to use his technology to put out these tiny homes and greenhouses for veterans. And Mr. Jonas is an incredible artist out of New York. And I'll let him talk about his
–
it's okay with you, by the way. He's an incredible artist. With the host, and what we're doing as a fundraiser for Hope, for Dream Habitat Hope, it's a working title. We haven't come up with a name for the collaboration, and I'm fine just going with Hope. But anyways, for that collaboration, we're going to be doing a Kickstarter, and part of the Kickstarter is we've got artists, DJs, anybody in the arts that are photographers that are willing to participate in selling their art, and a portion of the sale goes towards the Dream Habitat Hope project. So Jonas is one of the artists that wants to help. And without further blabbing, why don't you tell us what you do, Jonas, and thank you for being on stage.
Oh, of course. Yeah, just real quick, how you doing? My name's Jonas Rader. I am from New York City. I'm a third-generation painter. I'm a full-time working artist. And one of the things I always wanted to do, which was a dream of mine, was to become a known artist. But the bottom line with that would be to use my power with the art to help. So I met Carlos at an art show about 3.5 years ago through my friend Maria, who was also a very talented artist. Carlos and I exchanged information. He admired my work. And I've always had that kind of philanthropic bone in my body to try to help. So Carlos had contacted me recently about this idea, and I was sold on it the minute he mentioned it. And here we are.
Boy,
so
we're looking at a powerful trio here, because a lot of artists, they're innovators, and
yes.
I see this project going a long way.
Yeah,
you know, they've also been homeless. a lot of artists can, you know, the reason I think artists are so interested in what I'm doing or what we're doing with, and I want to start saying we're, you know, I want to get off of this me stuff. It's not me. This is not about me. It's about we, as Chris always says. You know, what we are doing is incredible. You know, the fact that I found Chris is incredible. But what I've noticed is when I talk to artists, whether they're a DJ, a fine artist, an NFT artist, you know, a digital artist, they all share the same, you know, when I tell them what I'm doing, they all say I want to be part of it. And I'll tell you why, because artists know struggle. And maybe Jonas can, you know, I know many artists, and, you know, it's not the path of least resistance. You know, it's a path of passion. You know, you're not doing it for the money, right? I don't think artists wake up and say, oh, I'm going to be a famous artist and become, you know, usually they don't make wealth till they're dead, right? I mean, artists.
No, the chance of an artist making a dollar is very, very slim to none in terms of making a living. I mean, yeah, side projects great while you have your regular job, but the chances, it's like swimming across the ocean. You know, it's hard, but I love it. And somehow I'm doing it, and I don't think you can stifle passion, which is something that I always identify in people. And Carlos and is a passionate guy. You could tell in his voice, in his excitement, he wants to help and help people and help the planet. So I'm all in on that. So I immediately noticed that he was very passionate, and I'm a passionate person myself. I don't really like to talk much, but here I am talking. So I wanted to be on the passion team, and whatever I can do to help facilitate and help raise money and awareness and just help out. And I'm excited. I'm excited. So thank you, Carlos.
I'm going to tell you why I say it as a powerful, you guys as a powerful trio, as a brain trust, is there's a guy who's an artist. And artists can see things that the average person doesn't see. There's one, I got to get his name, but he took garbage, trash, stuff that people threw away and turned it into an island that you can actually live on, a man-made island. An artist did that.
Yeah.
Now, with some of you have heard of these.
That's called being creative. That's called being creative. And being creative, I've read, and I don't know how much truth there is to it, but there seems to be some truth, and I'm sorry to interrupt. They say sometimes being creative is even better than being smart.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah.
And now, another example of.
Fascinating.
Maybe Carlos or maybe even Chris has heard of this guy, Mike Reynolds. Mike Reynolds, I guess he's the guy who coined the term Earthships. He was a licensed architect, and I think he's part artist too. This guy had the idea of, you know, we can take stuff that people threw away, you know, used tires, Coke bottles, and turn it into building materials.
Yep.
And they revoked his architecture license. So now he's in vogue because I know a lot of people have done Earthships, but I mean he just took stuff that people threw away. I spent a week out in Ohio. No, building, you know, Earthships and stuff like that. Just we took stuff that people threw away, and it looks aesthetically pleasing after you finish with it. But artists, if you got some type of a development project or whatever, I would having an artist on your team because they can see into the invisible come up with stuff that you're just not going to see it.
You know, we need to get Maria on the show. I'm going to see when she can get on the show. She's our co-inventor that designed the buildings and the skyscrapers. She's an artist architect. And what you're saying is so much on point because I built my greenhouse in my backyard. I'm not an artist. Okay, I'm an engineer. I'm all about functionality. You know, if it doesn't function, I don't care. It can look beautiful. If it doesn't function, it has no value to me. That's my engineering brain speaking. The beauty right. of Maria is she's an artist and architect, and she realizes that function without form won't sell. In other words, you know, right now my wife calls my greenhouse in the backyard an eyesore, okay? An architect will make it look like a work of art, and that's what Maria has done. If you go to our OU812 Aquaponics channel, we've got a flyover of the greenhouse that was designed by Maria that was rendered by our incredible graphic artist from the Czech Republic, Wojtek. He's an incredible artist. And when you look at that design, you can see why adding form is so important, because it makes the structure beautiful. It makes it something that you want to put in your backyard. And she did some incredible stuff with the colors, like she used different pastels to break up, you know, because I said, look, we need the building to be white because we want it to be reflective. And, of course, that's my engineering brain. I would have painted the whole thing white, right? How boring. Mm-hmm. She went with some, like, nice pastel shades that are near white, but they break up the pattern so that now it looks beautiful. And, you know,
yeah, she's an
I never would have thought
artist.
Of that.
Yeah. That makes sense. No, Maria is incredibly talented.
She is.
Well,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Chris, are you there? He might have still. He's always working on something. He'll be back.
Yes, sir, I am.
Chris.
I'm here.
All right, now, Chris, you're doing the tiny house part of that. Because, see, what I'm looking at, God, you guys are getting ready to, on an entrepreneurial level, you guys are going to make a bunch of money. Chris, let's get with the tiny house part. We have the artist on the phone. We have Carlos here with the carport. Matter of fact, Carlos, you're doing that. It's for people that are just tuning in. You're doing the greenhouse carport.
Yeah, you know, what I'm doing is I invented a greenhouse that grows fish plants and mushrooms in extreme environments. So think off-grid, deserts, tundras. Okay, so I invented that, and I knew that they could be converted into buildings, tiny homes and skyscrapers, like in Dubai. But I'm not an architect, okay? So I couldn't myself design, right? However, I ran into Maria and her mom, Irina, by total accident. And you know it's not an accident, right? Nothing's an accident. I ran into them by destiny. I wasn't planning on stopping, but I stopped at this event at like midnight on a November night in Washington, D.C., on the mall. Now, you can imagine how cold it is. It was freezing. And I just decided to drop in because I was going to volunteer later that evening. It was a Burning Man event, and I was going to volunteer later that evening. And I decided to pop in to see what was happening, right? And I see Maria and her mom, and I start talking to them. And, of course, as you know, I'm very passionate, and I had just built my greenhouse, and I was growing mushrooms. And I said, you know, I started talking about my greenhouse and mushrooms, and these two ladies are like, oh, we're big foragers. We know all about mushrooms. We used to pick mushrooms back in our country. I said, really? What do you guys do? And they told me they were artists and architects. And when they said architect, as soon as the word left the mouth, I was like, oh, my gosh, I wonder if they will design my buildings for me. Now, can you imagine asking an architect to do free work? I mean, think about it. How many architects, if you go up to them and say, hey, can you design this building for me? I can't pay you, would do it. Well, Maria and her mom did it. And they, you know, there's a famous picture, which is going to be famous someday, of me standing outside of a restaurant in Georgetown with Maria and her mom, and I'm holding the sketches that they generated that became the patent that we have on the houses, buildings, and skyscrapers that can grow fish plants and mushrooms in the middle of the desert. But for those ladies, it never would have happened. And they became co-inventors on the building. So now the greenhouse was my invention. You know, I came up with it on my own. But then when we converted the greenhouse into the buildings, that's when Maria and her mom came in, and they became co-inventors. And that's how we're sharing, you know this and what I'm talking about is part of a much bigger project called the Open Innovation Engine. That's where we teach all humans on Earth how to protect innovation, and then we make it free for personal and educational use, and then we monetize it through products, startups, services, and or licensing these patent portfolios to the corporations. So this is all part of a much, much bigger project, which is this. What if all humans on Earth started collaborating?
Wouldn't that be
wonderful? We would solve every problem on Earth. We would solve every problem on Earth.
Now, you're having rooms on Clubhouse. We're probably on Clubhouse now, right?
You know, this morning I didn't get a chance to broadcast this on Clubhouse. But I have a little lounge in Clubhouse. Clubhouse has clubs. The club that we have is called Dream Habitat, and Dream Habitat also has a house. Clubhouse has clubs and houses now, I don't know what the difference is, but we have a Dream Habitat club and a Dream Habitat house. To get into the house, you have to be invited. To get into the club, you just have to ask to join. And what we do is we host meetings every Sunday at noon where we record the meetings and we talk about, what I've been trying to do with these meetings is to make them teaching moments where, like, one meeting I taught how to build the one in my backyard, the 10 by 20 out of a carport. I went in detail on how to build it. It's recorded with a PDF that you can follow along, kind of like an instructable. So I did a meeting on that. I did a meeting on our $500 perk for the Kickstarter, which is a mini greenhouse that grows mushrooms and microgreens in a very small area, like 2 feet by 2 feet. I did a talk on that and explained how that works. This Sunday, I'm going to be doing a talk on health and wealth and how it relates to gardening. And I'm going to go over my routine of meditation and breath work. And how that relates to stress relief, and then I'm going to tie that into my greenhouse and how that releases stress, you know, growing your own food and the spirituality of it. So that's going to be this Sunday, and I'm trying to make them teaching moments. They're recorded, you know, because I don't want to just be there constantly begging, you know, hey, support my Kickstarter. You know, I want to make sure that I'm giving people something that are coming to these shows. So that way they can see that I'm legit, you know, I'm trying to help, and hopefully they can contribute. And this is the beauty of it. You know, people say, well, what if I don't have any money? Well, the thing is, you don't need money. You can contribute in so many ways. You can just spread the word. Say, hey, have you heard about, you know, Dream Habitat and the Hope Group? Have you heard what they're doing? Hey, by the way, they're having a Kickstarter. Do you want to help? Well, you can't help. Oh, can you send out the link to all your followers? So, you know, we, as a community, you know, of humans, and when I say community, I'm talking the whole entire human race, you know, we need to start working together and collaborating to solve all these problems that we've created for our children's children. And they're all solvable as soon as we work together.
Okay, now for those of you For those of you who have, if you don't have Clubhouse, download it to your phone. It's well worth it. I'm on it like every day. Chris, now you're doing the tiny house part of that. Explain your part.
Well, we do the any house part of that. So it can be
okay,
a tiny
any
house.
Got it.
It can be a full size. And we want to meet the need. And by doing that, I've got the material side of it. And by having the material side of it, I can build his greenhouses. So supply the material for the greenhouse and...
Brother Chris, you could build our skyscrapers, right?
And build the skyscrapers, and that's what I'm saying. Anything that's ever been built, we can build out of this material. And if it's on the residential side, any blueprint that's ever been built and anyone that ever will be designed, and that's where we want to work with our children and let them play on the computers with the AutoCAD and with our college students and our architects throughout the world, and give them all a purpose in the afternoon to work together, creating unity in the community, giving an equal opportunity, getting the food, getting the water, getting everything that someone needs. Once we meet those needs, I will have what I want, and so will you, and you will be able to now help with the economy, because these people are not costing us money. They're actually spending money. So you're making money from them, but they're also appreciative of your business and your products, because your business and your products is the reason that they were able to get where they're at. The products that are going to be invented in the future by these patents, just like he said, they get released so that other people can then grow upon them. We want our children to know that they're creators every second of the day. And the more they know about different products and different things and different patents, and we teach them very young because they're sponges, and we want them to absorb. So the one thing that we have to do as adults, we have to take what we've absorbed, and we say we've got our brain, and our brain is just, you know, full of all this knowledge. Let's squeeze it, and let's let that knowledge come out and show it to our children, and realize that the knowledge we want to pour into them is the good knowledge we have, not the bad knowledge, because our children become what we teach them. So I want to teach them, and I want to do workshops across the country, and you can call in, set that up. I'll let you explain that, and realize that right now, we've got three machines that within the next year and a half, but within the next 365 days, I could supply enough material in every community to not have a homeless person nowhere. And that's just with the three factories. Now, by that time, I could have 3 to 5 to 6 more online, so maybe we could do it in 6 months. But it comes down to, what are we going to do? All you got to do is call in and say, look, I want to put these people together. We want to do a workshop. Now, when we do a workshop, we have to bring everything, because it's going to be a building workshop, but it's only going to take a couple of hours. And it ain't going to be me sitting there talking. There will be people talking. But instead of us talking, we're going to walk the walk. Mm-hmm. And we're going to change someone's life. And
almost
this
like
is
the barn raising, right, Chris? Like back in the day, used to do community barn raising.
Yeah. It's been done. The thing is let's do it out of a material that won't burn, won't absorb water.
No. I was just saying that's so beautiful that you involve the community and you do a real time build.
Yeah, and change a life while we're there, or many lives while we're there. It depends on how many people want to show up, how many packages do we need to bring. And we could fill up an entire parking lot in an 8-hour day, and every one of your homeless that are in your community would be inside of a home now, tomorrow. Don't leave them there without a purpose. So they could have a warm place to sleep in a week. All you got to do is call us, set up a meeting, and let's make it happen. These machines make 2 feet of material per second. That's 120 feet of material a minute.
Can you explain the material if you don't mind?
Pay attention. Sorry?
Can you explain the material if you don't mind? I'm an engineer, so I'm very interested.
Yeah, it's a cold roll steel process, and we take a flat roll of steel. It's got 3,000-pound roll of steel, and each foot is basically a pound. So this thing will run out 120 feet of material. So 120 pounds of material will run out of that machine per minute. And it will cut the hole. It'll punch the holes for the electrical and the plumbing, so no drilling. And it'll cut it to the millimeter that I want. And you put it together in ABC 123. And I took a 13-year-old brother and a 16-year-old, and they lived in another city. And they were my neighbor, and they came over with me, and in 2.5 hours, they built a 10-foot by 16-foot tall tiny house, 10-foot by 10-foot by 16-foot tall. It put a queen-size bedroom in the attic. But they made the walls and they made the trusses right in a parking lot, and they had never touched the material before in their life. But once the 13-year-old had – I was working with the 16-year-old, setting up the jig and getting ready to start making trusses, and the 13-year-old had ran around and put all the jigsaw puzzles all the pieces for the erector set where they go. And he looks at me and he says, "Man, let me have that gun." He says, "You don't need to do that." And I just stepped back and started taking pictures of it. And they built all those trusses. Because once you have it lined out, anybody can do it. You can do it in your front yard. Somebody can show up with a trailer. So your family just did something and load it up and send it out. And you just sponsored somebody's life to get started. And it's that simple. I taught a blind man how to do it, and I did it in front of 600 people. So it was, what can you do by you having sight? And now what can we get set ourselves up to be able to see? And I started a youth program down in Louisiana with one of my partners, and the kids came into the factory, and they built two frames, and they went out on the site to a habitat build where the adults were building. And those kids outbuilt the build next door, and they showed up in two cities. So one day they set the walls, and the second day they set the trusses. But the other one already had the wall standing, but it still don't have the trusses. But this house is superior to that one. And it weighs half the weight that that one did. But it was what those kids saw, and they never touched a saw. They just put it together.
It's kind of like an erector set, right?
It's a big erector set. We can take it back apart and redesign it and rebuild something else with it.
That is brilliant, and, you know, I'm telling you, as an engineer and patent attorney, that is brilliant. So basically you've converted into an erector set with pre-cut holes and everything, which means you can ship all the material – and then a group of people could put it up. That is so perfect.
ABC,
you know, we haven't had our meeting yet. I can't wait.
Wait a minute. We got another call here. 407 area code, your mic is open.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm on the phone with Carla, my partner, tiny house partner. Carla bought my tiny house, and she's got 2 acres of land. And she put that tiny house on there. She has a greenhouse. And I want Carla, I brought Carla in because she has the mind that you guys have to create something beautiful on this 2 acres of land. And you guys have all these easy ways to do it. So, Carla, do you have any questions for these guys that if you're interested in what they're doing? Carla, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Oh, my gosh, yes, let's change the planet together. I have 5 lots, and I want to create sustainable ideas from different people. So if that is your technology and you are willing to, help into this project, we want to create Eco Village, tiny houses to be used for Airbnb. And I'm creating a permaculture garden around so people can create, like, an ark. So this is a tiny house with seeds,
enjoy
environment, solar, green energy.
You're not green. Go ahead. I'm got distracted.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
We can hear
you. Can I hear you?
We can hear you.
Okay, go ahead.
Awesome. It is a complex project, but it's an eco village, and I have 5 lots in an area that there's no city code. We can build in different materials, and it's innovative. It's an hour from Orlando, in an area of where there's retirement for people, and people have the time, and they have the means to spread this knowledge, and we can impact it. Guys, I'm looking for help. I have a place to create a showroom. If you have something innovative that is going to make this planet a better place, please come and take a look at it.
That would be beautiful. Wow.
Yes, it would.
That's
definitely.
That's incredible. And, the fact that you're doing permaculture, the fact that she's doing permaculture, Chris, is incredible. I you know, aquaponics led me to permaculture, and the combination of permaculture with all these other techniques is really quite beautiful.
And I didn't end up there. I'm sorry to interrupt for nothing. I did a lot of research. So in walking distance from my farm, there is Wendell and Nancy. She is like one of the massive protectors for woodpecker environmentalists. They were university teachers at UF. They were directors and helped with Hofner organizations to create farms everywhere. They're my teachers. They are the people that if I have shelter for the people to go over there, they will teach whoever comes to that Airbnb to spend the week. They will change their life forever. 20 years in permaculture established in there, and these people are historical. In another area, in another side, there is a nursery, a lady from Brazil, and she's been planting exotic tropical plants with medical purposes, the most amazing superfoods for almost 5 years now, and her farm is growing. She is an horticulturist, and we're doing a workshop over there on December 17th to start teaching people to raise funds to create the village. Help.
That's beautiful.
Come and take a look at it, please.
How do we connect? What's the best way to connect with listeners?
Well, I've got everybody's number because I know Viata from not way back, but we've known each other approaching 10 years and a couple
my
years.
My number is very easy. It's 407-401-1004. 407-401-1004.
And they have a, Carla, Carla, I heard they have a clubhouse meeting on Sunday. Do we have to be invited to that to get in?
Yeah, the meeting is open to everybody. But you do
have
to
be on clubhouse first.
Right.
Yeah, I'm on clubhouse.
You need to join clubhouse first. Join clubhouse.
She's on,
and then
Carla's
you can...
on clubhouse. She's on clubhouse.
I never talk. Oh, I just listen to people, but I never talk to anybody, though.
So how does she connect with you for your Sunday meeting?
It's easy. Why don't you get on Clubhouse and search Dream Habitat, two words, club. So DREAM space Habitat, HABITAT. I always have to think on that word. I don't know why. The Dream Habitat is the room or the club. And then we also have a house. So once you join the club, and if you friend me on Carla's Villamar on Clubhouse, if you friend me, I will send you the link to the house. And the only difference between the house and the club is that the house has a lounge that you can jump in and talk anytime. I think that's the main difference. And the house is invite only. So that's the only other difference. The club itself is open to everybody. You just have to hit join. But for the house, I can send you a link, and then you can join the house too if you want.
Well, I deleted the app. I deleted the app. I have to re-log in.
Okay,
Charlie.
So are you ready for that?
I will. If somebody just sends me a link, I have I'm a little challenged with technology, so I understand the message that you're trying to convey, But I'm grounded. I'm out to nature. I need someone to help me with all of this connection, because if I could have that message out there already, the village would be ready, and I have difficulties with that.
How far are you from Fort Myers?
From where?
From Fort Myers.
From Fort Myers, you are, I would say, you go 75 north. You are an hour north of Tampa. So how far are you from Tampa?
I'm not sure. I've just got
a project wanting me
to get started around Fort Myers.
Fort Myers is about an hour and a half, maybe more, from south of Tampa.
Yeah, no more than 3 hours.
Not bad.
So
yeah.
Fort Myers.
Okay, so that's not bad. That's not bad. But, yeah, I'm also working on a project in Miami. And so, yeah, this is Chris Collins, by the way. Very nice to have
Chris
you on the
Collins.
Show today.
Okay. Oh, gosh.
Thank you for calling in.
I don't even know where I'm at. Thank you, Dr. V, for bringing me in.
Well, L.A. has been telling me to join Clubhouse for a while, but I guess this is the message I needed to get busy on Clubhouse. So you and Carla, you and I can, join forces and get
yes.
these guys up here to help with your village.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Yeah,
hey, Carla, how can you find more Clubhouse? Yeah.
Oh, I'll figure
maybe
it
you
out.
Can tell us how we
That's
can find you.
I'll figure it out. For Sunday, I'll figure it out. We'll make
okay.
it happen. It's yeah,
perfect.
Figure it out.
This Sunday at 12 noon, I'll be talking about meditation and health and how it ties to gardening. And also we'll cover what we're doing with our artists, you know, for our Kickstarter for the Hope, the Dream Habitat Hope collaboration that is brand new.
Is that
actually, 12?
Is that 12 noon Eastern time?
Yeah.
Yes, 12 noon Eastern time,
okay.
Florida time. I'm in the Washington, D.C. area, so we're in the same time zone. But, yeah, that's a good
okay.
question. It's Eastern time, 12 p.m.
Okay.
this Sunday. Actually, every Sunday at 12 p.m., I'm going to be holding a room forever. Because, you know,
Amen.
We've also been talking about something else. We're going to be opening up a room that's going to run every day, 24 hours a day, because we have people across the world that will run it while we're sleeping, but we can run it while they're sleeping. And it's time to get this message out there that there is a solution and you are the solution. And as we are able to share these messages, the more people that you can share the message with, and get this community, this calling community, these giving us their problems in the community. So anything that you're going through throughout the country, please reach out. We have solutions. I've got thousands of collaborations that we want to take every problem, put a solution to it, put the stitches in it, put the antibiotics on it, make sure that this wound never comes back. And we're going to do it by empowering our children. They're going to become the teachers. They're going to come home and say, look what I did today. And when their parents come out
yeah.
and see it and know that they're going to see it for the rest of their life, their grandchildren's life and their grandchildren's life, and it's going to continue on to give them a legacy to live on forever. This material does last 1,000 years or more, but it can also be recycled 1,000 times or more. So it's time to start using the recycled material from natural disasters to recover them and
That's
rebuild
right.
them, create sustainable life immediately. My search and rescue team is the one that's wanting me to do this project in Fort Myers because there's a gentleman that was homeless that showed up and started helping them, and he was very good with very articulate, very everything. And they wound up finding him a place to stay with someone temporarily while we try to acquire, around 5 acres of land so that we can build a tiny village there and get that part moving. But it's using the washers, dryers, refrigerators, stoves, water heaters, and cars that are destroyed by this natural disaster to build the structure inside and the trusses, using the plastic, styrofoam, and fiberglass to do an outside structure that you can shoot a 2x4 at and not go through it. You can shoot a small caliber rifle through it or at it, and it won't go through it. But it's time for us to realize we don't have to have these weapons of mass destruction to win a war and intimidation. We need encouragement, and we can do it with weapons of reconstruction and utilizing the technology that's been put in place that has damaged this planet in the past 100 years more than it had 1 million prior. But bring back humanity. We forgot how to love. We don't say hello.
Yeah.
We don't look sideways. People need to take the blinders off and realize that when you look sideways, not only just look, see what's going on around you. Claim it. And
okay.
Let's fix it.
And what's your name, sir?
My name is Chris Collins, and I am the founder
Chris
of
Collins.
Hope. Yes.
Okay. I think we, Carla and I, might have to drive and meet you somewhere to get this thing going. But I want to say two things. First of all, we don't want to apply antibiotics to anything because that's anti-life. We want to apply probiotics to everything. Pro-life, and that's what you guys are all about. And then secondly, I heard one of you say, I don't like to say it's all about me, it's all about me. We have a saying in my Blog Talk family, thank us. Thank us meaning united spirits or united souls. And so you're absolutely right that we don't want to just say, oh, it's all about me, look what I'm doing. It's thank us who are united in mind, body, soul, and united, the us is united spirits, united souls. And that's what we're becoming. I just love the idea that you guys have the solutions because we have so many problems that people are looking for the government to solve or the medical system or the educational system. And I really think it's up to us, united spirits, united souls, who are powerful creative beings. And Carla and I are going to have to meet up with you guys to get her project moving, and hopefully you guys can come to her location as well. So I'm just really grateful, L.A., that you brought these guys together because this feels like the energy we needed to move this thing to get Panasoffkee. Is that it, Carla, Panasoffkee's location?
Lake Panasoffkee, that's the villages area. It is
Lake.
It's part of the villages. So
in
one side of the lake is a big reservation, and 75 goes, north, south in that road. And then on the other side of the lake is this older town where I'm at, where we are. And then the 20-year-old permaculture farm is on the road across, like in a walking distance, and the nursery where we have all of the edibles with the exotic plants from Brazil being cultivated for 5 years already, it's maybe 2 miles down the road. So Lake Panasoffkee is the villages.
Incredible.
So I just,
you know, I would
just spent, no, go ahead.
No, you please go.
I just spent 2 weeks in Lakeland, Florida, outside of Tampa, cleaning, following a truck around, picking up debris from the Hurricane Ian. And then we had another storm come through, so we still have more debris to pick up in every area. But I'm done with Lakeland area. I've got to focus on my area, the Orlando, Central Florida area. But what you were saying about recycling all those trees and branches that were picked up, put in a truck, they went to dump it, and they made mulch out of all of the debris that they're picking up.
Nice.
They're recycling it and putting it through a machine and making mulch out of it. And I thought, there's got to be a way we can do the same thing to all this other debris and vegetation that's sitting around. So it sounds like that's what you guys are doing. Recycling, vegetation, branches, whatever is out there just wasting away, we ought to be able, with our creative minds, to recycle it and use it as you're doing, create housing, create all the things that we need to solve these problems. So thank you for what you're doing.
I would like to say something about plastic, if it may I. It should be illegal, okay? If you tell me if it's illegal, a plastic industry should be shut down yesterday together with the sugar industry. Stop the diabetes, stop the cancer, stop the plastic, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Stop it.
Yep. That's what I'm doing right now, picking up plastic on the street. There's so much damn plastic on the streets that people are just throwing out their windows. I don't know what the hell they're doing. But, yeah, they ought to make plastic illegal. It's crazy. In the meantime, let's recycle it or do something.
Exactly. That was my point.
Because I was reading, I think a city in Virginia was making their roads from recycled plastic and also making the road surface white instead of black, which is incredible for reducing the amount of heat in the city. You know, we've got all that black asphalt, which is incredibly toxic. And, you know, it's not recycled. It's all from from petrol. But, you know, taking, like, for example, I was thinking, you've seen those 1 liter plastic bottles, right?
Right.
There's people that have built entire tiny homes out of plastic bottles, those 1 liter plastic bottles.
Absolutely. Yeah. In Brazil, the airport. In Brazil, at the airport, this is very important, guys. We do art. I mean, I grew up in Brazil. I travel to Africa. I do environmental projects all over the place. I'm a whistleblower, and I used to do things with church. So they don't like me very much nowadays. But I'm not going to shut up. So you can't transform the plastic into something useful. You can recycle this. In Brazil, for instance, there's fancy stores. You can buy chairs made out of, you know, milk bottles, made out of, you know, plastic. But you have to educate the people. It's not just us being conscious about it, but we go over there and we buy the plastic. And then whoever understands social media, people need to start talking about this and stop buying it. Stop consuming this. Filter your water. Create healthy water filtration system. You're going to stop the gas, the all of the fossil fuels that's being burned for you to go get the water somewhere else, put in the plastic, bring it to you. Besides of what you put in your body, that is changing your DNA for consuming all those products that comes into plastic bottles. People need to wake up. What happened? Why we're going to be, for how long we're going to be brainwashed? For how long we're going to allow people to do commercials about things that comes in plastic?
There's a problem.
When somebody is going to educate our kids? So it's insane. It's insane. I am so passionate about this. I sold everything I had. I bought a dome that is in there, the parts of the dome that is created in a way that the filtration is created, is engineered by a friend of mine. He built airplanes, so he built the dome like it is an airplane. So there is a fan on top of it that sucks up, like a commercial fan that you buy in any commercial kitchen, something that for less than $10,000 we were able to build. It's not assembled yet because I need a Cinderella toilet that is the top of the end of septic systems. So it's high technology that instead of us using clean water, that our kids, I'm not talking grandchildren, I'm talking about our kids, they are not going to have clean water at the end of their lives. And we are now going to the toilet and flushing all of our sources of water. When is that going to stop? So we need toilets. We need different septic systems. At the farm, Wendell and Nancy, they will talk about this. They will teach you what we're doing with the nutrients from the soil. God. Sadhguru, with Safe Soil Movement, went over to 100 countries trying to get people to wake up. So it is something that if you guys have a voice, and obviously you do, because I end up here for a miracle, and please help us to spread the message. Help me
to show these people what are the consequences that they are doing to their children with the clean water. Every time you go to the toilet and you pee and you flush that water, your children will not going to have quality of that water in 20 years if we don't do anything. And when we are going to stop throwing plastic in the oceans? When we are going to stop flying and using fossil fuels to create plastic?
You know,
more plastic.
I should mention I'm in my greenhouse right now. Outside right now, it's actually pretty warm. It's about 70 degrees.
Can I get
Fahrenheit?
Some plastic bags? I'm picking up trash along the way, and I ran out of plastic bags. Maybe three.
Now I'm going inside the greenhouse, and it's like an oasis. I've got all my plants here.
Thank you.
It's incredible.
Nancy.
And you can breathe fresh air. You're in the middle of fresh oxygen. We are toxic in the environment, in the air conditioning. And now over there, you can think clear.
Hello,
well,
hey, are you
Chris,
there? Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, I'm here. We're going to be here tomorrow. You know, we do things 5 or 6 days a week. So we'll be back tomorrow to pick up, believe it or not, just like, what's today, Thursday?
Yeah.
So tomorrow we'll be back for part four.
Okay.
This conversation started like 2 or 3 days ago. So, Chris, I'll let you have the last word of the day.
Well, thank you very much. I thank everybody. You know, this collaborative, you know, it's continuing to grow. Like you said, this will be part four tomorrow. I'm blessed to be able to get to know all of you. I really want to speak with you ladies. I would like to leave my phone number here as the closing to this. So if anybody needs to write anything down, I'm going to give you the website for how to get in contact, hopeforhousing.org or hopeforhousing.com. You can use the number 4 in the .org, so hope, the number 4, housing.org. My phone number is 309-542-6319. I would love to come and visit every city in the next year. And go back the following year and just continue to watch all of you grow, because what it's going to take is you and what you're doing, what you're going to be, how you're going to figure out how much more you are inside. All of you are amazing and you're unique, and you are the you in unity. So it's you and I together's why. We can pluralize that T, and we can make the future see that our children and their children and their children's grandchildren will always be. They don't have to leave this planet. We just have to start out and give them a foundation as strong as granite, clean up this air, and start to prepare for everything that's going to come. I'm walking out into this air. Right now, the wind is blowing, and you probably hear it in my mic. And I look forward to part four, and I will say goodnight.
All right, part four tomorrow morning at 10:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Everybody have a good rest of the day.
Thank you.